Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this should be a pretty interesting one, huh, Stone?
Hey, this is going to be a fun one. We've got folks that have made the drive across town, across the parking lot, and then we've got a guy who's been all across America. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Executive Director for Odyssey Atlanta, Mr. Jeff Cohen, and we're also going to talk to CFA with Elliott & Associates Wealth Advisors, Mr. Kurt Klomb. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a gentleman who has been involved in a rather interesting project called Hourly America. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Heath Padgett. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great this morning. Thank you for having me.
Hourly America, can you share a little bit about what you're up to?
Yeah, so my wife and I are on an unconventional honeymoon to all 50 states. We kind of took traditional office jobs after college, and after sitting in an office all day from 9 to 5, we kind of realized that there has to be something more. And so in lieu of a traditional honeymoon, we went out for 7 months on the road, and we're filming a documentary about different kinds of hourly jobs across the country. I'm interviewing people, learning a little bit about their work and who they are as a person, and sharing their stories to people. And it's a film that we're going to be releasing in August of 2015.
And why did you choose the subject hourly? Like, why is that important?
Yeah, so first of all, it's important to just pick a niche so you have something to compare.
Right.
And secondly, at first I was just going to go out and do different jobs because we wanted to travel, but we didn't want to just travel around for the sake of travel. We needed something to keep us grounded. So I came up with an idea to work a different job in every state. I'm only 23 years old, still trying to figure out what the heck I'm doing with my life. And so I thought it'd be good to go out and compare different kinds of jobs across the country and see what different people do for work. And then I teamed up with a company called Snag. Job.com. They're the largest hourly job board in the country. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, we have this huge database of hourly jobs. And so they could help me kind of get jobs and know that by having this big company behind me, I wasn't just some crazy kid, even though
right.
I am, you know. But so yeah, teaming up with those guys, they had this huge pool of hourly jobs. So it allowed me to go work at companies like Domino's, Buffalo Wild Wings. I'm working at Arby's today here in Atlanta. And so kind of giving me some collateral to go in for these jobs for one day at a time, get to know a little bit about the jobs themselves, but more than anything, get to know some of the people who are working there.
And then, so what are some of the jobs? Is it typically retail or fast food?
So I've done everything. My very first job was at a martial arts studio in New Mexico, and then I've worked for
the were like the tackling dummy?
I really was. I was the tackling dummy. I got kicked around by fourth degree black belts and beat up by eight-year-old girls. It was awesome. So I've done everything from that. I've worked on a dairy farm, a goat farm, and I've done a lot of jobs in retail and fast food and restaurants and things like that. So just the whole spectrum, anything that's paid by the hour.
But is it typically minimum wage hours or is it lawyer hours?
It's definitely not lawyer hours. So I don't get the unfortunate part of this trip is I don't get paid for any of the jobs that day. So I'm basically free labor. So that's the gimmick. I call them and I'm like, hey, you know, I want to come in for the day and work for you guys. You know, blah, blah, blah. This is my project, whether or not they think I'm crazy or not. And I'm also not going to get paid for the day. And so that's usually like, they're like, okay, done. We'll let them come in for the day.
We'll take a shot then.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what's the intention of the documentary? Like you went in there thinking what were you trying to accomplish?
Well, at first we didn't know, you know, that was the honest answer. First, I didn't know what I was going to be looking for, but what we've learned throughout this project, because we target businesses, the way I look them up is I check Google reviews per city. And so for instance, my last job was at New Scooters for Less in Gainesville, Florida. They've got just tremendous online reviews. Cause my thought is they have great online reviews for Yelp or Google, they probably have great customer service, therefore great people.
Right.
And so that's why I target these places. And so therefore, we've got to meet all these incredible places that their employees just go out of the way to make experiences for customers happen. But across the board, what I've learned in the simplest terms has been that there's a lot of people who would go out and rather work jobs that are pay a little bit less and enjoy what it is they do, whereas in just grinding away from jobs that suck, you know? So I think that's as simple as I can put it.
But
you know?
Are you trying to get the perspective of the worker, or are you trying to have a statement about like minimum wage workers?
It's more about the workers themselves. I've intentionally try to steer away from the whole minimum wage thing just because there's a lot of political and stuff that I just don't know about. Yeah, that absolutely. Topic, I mean, Nickel and Dimed, a book that I read for inspiration before this trip was a book called Working by Studs Terkel, where he just basically went out and interviewed everyday workers to hear about stories of their lives. And that was a huge inspiration for me as far as the mindset that I've had on this trip. You know, I work with them throughout the day and I learn a little bit about the job they do. You know, obviously I don't become an all pro in one day. But basically, and then the last part of the day, I sit down with them, ask them questions about why they chose this line of work, you know, what they're passionate about. Do they want to stay in this kind of job forever? What did they enjoy about working in the service industry? What do they hate about working in the service industry somewhere like fast food? And so it's just across the board, asking them all these different kinds of questions based off of what I found in that day of work.
Yeah, but don't they get like bummed out that they are not on Undercover Boss and you're about to give them 10 grand?
Probably.
In fact, they
probably make more than I do. So that's the sad part. They're like, this guy's coming in. He's been on a couple different interviews and he probably makes all this money, and they'd be completely wrong. So
now, have you found the workers to be kind of doing this as a means to exist, or are they doing it because they have a passion on the side that they're doing? This is just a way to fund that passion. Like, what are you finding out there in America?
It definitely depends. But one story that stands out the most to me was on a apple orchard farm up in Burlington, Vermont, with a guy. He had a degree in environmental science and he could be doing a whole myriad of things that paid a lot of money.
Right.
But his whole thing was he fell in love with farming and connecting people to the food that they grow, because that's like a big thing that we're really disconnected from the food that we grow. Right. And we just don't know where it comes from. And so there's a need there. And so he said that, you know, I could go out and get a job that's going to pay me 80 or 90 grand a year and I can kill my student debt loan. And that might be a really conventional and smart way to go, but I'm young and I still have time to make mistakes. And so I'm going to take this job for $11 an hour working here on the farm while I work on starting my business. He's already started once and he failed at this little restaurant. He's going to come back again and he's going to do this because he feels like by working this job that doesn't kill his brain, he still has the mental capacity to strive for building something bigger. And those are the stories that really stick out to me.
And then, so far you're almost done, right? What'd you say? You're 43?
Yeah, we're at 43. Mm-hmm. We're going to be back in Texas by hopefully next week, and fingers crossed. I've been doing like 10 jobs a month and driving in our 20-year-old RV that we bought off of Craigslist. And so like we've had leaks. We went for a month without a refrigerator. We got struck by lightning in South Dakota. Our RV melted our battery. And so I couldn't be more happy to get back home.
So now, so you're doing the work and then your wife is filming?
Yeah, so my wife over here in the corner, you can't see her because we're on radio, but she does the filming for every job. So she comes in and follows us around with the camera all day while I get to know the workers that I'm working with.
And your mic?
Yeah, so we have a little boom mic attached to our camera that we do, and so yeah.
So now are you started editing the footage or you're waiting until you get
it
all done?
Heck no. We tried. So we tried to start like pushing out videos along the way, but at 3 jobs a week and 3 days of travel a week in an RV, it was too stressful. We got miserable. And so we've done all we can to keep blogs posted at heathpadgett.com and hourlyamerica.com, where I do recaps of all the jobs. And that's really all. We had to kind of focus, you know. But we're going to be releasing a lot of the interviews and snippets leading up to the documentary that we're releasing in August of 2015. So
are you capturing any content, like of you driving and talk planning, like GoPro cameras in the car?
We do a GoPro video mounted on the dashboard before and after every job. Basically anytime anything breaks, I tell Alyssa, grab the camera. We got to get this. As much as I don't want to be on film right now, we got to get it on film.
Have you learned anything from these interviews that really surprised you? Like maybe you kind of went in with one preconceived set of ideas around a topic and you totally got that turned on its head?
So like when people have been interviewing me?
Or when you've been talking to me? Just through the whole experience.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest eye-openers for an interview was on my third job, because we still were trying to figure out what the direction of this documentary was going to be about. It's not like you're filming a movie where you can script it all out and then it works out accordingly. I mean, 10 days into our trip, our fuel pump broke in the middle of Arizona and we were stuck, you know. And so, but my third job was at a retail habitat restore, one of their warehouses, interviewing one of their workers. And it was kind of just when the light went off for me was I was interviewing this guy named AJ. He had construction gigs for several years. And then during 2008, lost his job like a lot of other people. And then he basically came back from that. And he is a semi-pro quarterback for his local team. He started a youth league for kids that has like 200 underprivileged athletes in their community. And basically he's just doing all this really cool stuff with his life. And I'm just sitting here thinking like, nobody would ever know this guy's story. Yeah. And it's very compelling. And so that was, for me, the light went off. That's like, there's got to be so many people in everyday jobs, hourly jobs across the country, who are working as a barista at Starbucks or at McDonald's, who you would never know who that person is or what they're about. And if people knew what those people stand for and the lives they've endured, I think we would just treat each other better, you know, just in general.
Now, do you find that the generation that's coming up today, your generation, are looking at work differently? Like maybe in my generation, we looked at, we would get a job and have that job for our career. And your generation is more cobbling together a different variety of things that generate money so I can follow my passion and do what I love.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that, first of all. And it's sad because as our generation is embracing that mentality, student loans are going up. So that's like, it's a bad time. You know, you guys should have had that problem and not us.
Yeah, but, bad break for you.
Yeah. But
maybe
I would,
you guys shouldn't go to college. Maybe that's the lesson there.
You know, I would say that, but my mom's probably listening and my little brother still got to go. No, but I agree. Yeah. So that's a big thing. And I think that just embrace the startup mentality. Companies aren't going to be around, aren't being around for as long as they used to be. You know, you've got companies like Facebook that are 10 years old and billions of dollars.
But so, very few employees. I mean, before, billion-dollar companies had thousands of employees. Now billion-dollar companies can, you know, fit in this room with the number of employees.
Like, there was a concept that you go to work, and this is all from what I've learned from my parents and from other people that have told me about, you know, the generations before us, is that you go to work, you find a job, and you stay there, loyalty for that company for a very long time, and then you hopefully get a great retirement or something like that. And I just, that's not the case anymore. Like, that's not what people teach in college, and that's not what people are doing. And so it is very different.
So now for you, do you think you're going to fall in love with one of these 50 jobs you're going to have, and you're going to go, you know what, I'm going to be the guy who makes the barbecue sandwiches?
Be a documentarian. Is that what they call it?
A documentarian. I think so, maybe. You know,
no, American Express or something like that, that has a specific product designed for these lower middle income folks that are following their passion, is going to get behind him, underwrite this thing. This guy's going to roll up in a Rolls Royce this time next year. And we'll interview him again.
No, I'm not, because I'm going to pay off my $30,000 of student loan debt before I get any kind of nice vehicle.
Well, did you try to like Kickstarter this or crowdfund this at all?
We got married 4 days before we took off on this trip. And so we, instead of getting...
So this was like an impulsive thing?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
What a great idea.
Hey, you know what? I know you had these plans, but I just got this RV. And
so we asked people to donate to our trip in lieu of giving us wedding gifts. And then... we had our gas covered by our sponsor company, which was Snag a Job that I partnered up with before we left. And then along the way, we've picked up freelance writing gigs for RV-related companies. And so we get paid for those as well. And then we're going to launch a Kickstarter, though, in January to help us fund the editing
process.
The
editing part, right.
Yeah. And so it's kind of crazy, but it's the way that a lot of projects work now, you know. And we've went out and we'll have done 50 jobs and put in a lot of work. And I think we can make a real difference as far as giving people perspective in a different jobs. So we're hopeful that something really awesome comes out of this.
So this is great, because now we can send Snag a Job an invoice.
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
Maybe they'll pay for our gas. So now, what was your degree in?
Business communications.
So when did you start playing around with film?
When we started this trip.
So you'd never filmed anything before?
I was in software sales and in a tech startup back in Austin. And so I did that for 9 months. I started at my own company in college, completely unrelated. I started a clothing line that I ran off an e-commerce site for 2 years. And so I was very entrepreneurial. And that definitely helped come up with the creativity to make this journey happen. But I had really no experience in film, or I'd never been paid to write an article. That's now where we generate all of our money, you know, to live on. And so, yeah, we just jumped in head first, and it's worked out.
Now, was the intention part of the thinking, hey, let's figure out a way to fund a trip around the country because I want to see all 50 states?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was
like the sole intention that started it all. And then we just wanted to have
to figure out some way to kind of monetize it at some point?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what started to make a meaningful project. I mean, I was sitting in my job all day doing sales and I hated it. You know, everyone's like, you should go into sales because you can make money and it'll be fun and you're good at it because you can talk to people. And I hated it. And even though I love the company, I love the product that I was selling, it sucked. And I didn't want to do it for the rest of my life. And so that's why it came to a point. It's like, I got to do something else. Like, I was trying to write and blog and do things on the side, but it's like,
you got to kind of be all in.
You got to be kind of all in. You know, people say nights and weekends, that's when you start your company, or that's when you go in all in your idea. And I think that's great when you can do it. And that's the kind of person you are. And I applaud those people. I respect those people, but that's not me. I had to go all in. And why not at this point in my life? Because I can risk it, you know?
When you got nothing, you got nothing to lose, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Isn't there a song like that? So where can our listeners follow you? How do they keep up with your activities?
Yeah, they can check us out at Hourly America on Facebook and Twitter and hourlyamerica.com. So,
how'd you get your wife to agree to this?
Yeah, she loved it, man.
How come she's not mic'd up?
I know.
She should be.
So was it hard to convince her, or was she kind of on board right away?
So there's two parts.
Was it her idea?
We wanted to go travel. She's the one who actually said, let's go to all 50 states. So she's an adventurer at heart. And then I called her one day because I was like, hey, I was trying to come up with an idea. She's over here planning the wedding, and I'm over here dreaming about this trip. And I was like, hey, I think it'd be a really cool idea to go work a different job in every state along our trip, because it'd just be a lot of fun, you know? Right. And she was like, you want to work through our honeymoon? You know? It took her a couple of days, but after the matter,
well, she didn't say she would work.
No. She's like, I think that was her thing. Once she found out that she didn't have to work, right. That was okay. Yeah.
See, he is a sales guy.
That's right. She's the sales guy.
So here's the value proposition.
Well, this is awesome. I mean, that's great adventure. How long has it taken?
We've been on the road about 6 months and some change. So it'll be almost 7 months by the time we get back.
Any states or people kind of surprise you? You had a preconception of what it would be like, and then you got there. And
I mean, the Midwest, I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend anybody. It was lame. I'm sorry. There wasn't much out there, you know. The people were great everywhere.
What about like in Montana, or where they're doing the fracking and the oil towns? Did you go through those?
We went through North Dakota, and it was actually the only state where we haven't stayed the night, and because we just kept driving. And that was really just because we were in a hurry.
Right. They get a Mount Rushmore job? What was your job?
In North Dakota, I worked at a German beer hall. But honestly, one of the places that surprised us most was the Northeast, and how you could still feel that it had gotten hit by the recession in 2008. Because being from Texas, where the economy is just fantastic, especially in Austin, you know, I had no idea, you know, and you go up there and you can just feel it in a lot of places where there's just, you know, like going through Buffalo and places that have just been.
Did you drive the RV through Manhattan?
We did. And it was terrifying.
I got some video of that. Yeah. That's probably worth it right there.
Yeah. I wrote a blog about that. What I learned about fear of failure from driving my 29-foot motorhome into Manhattan. And it was terrifying.
Was it? I'm sure. With the cabs, that must have been nuts.
Yeah. And the roads were like 3-4 foot wide and just, yeah.
And you'd never driven an RV before? So that's a learning curve.
I drove moving trucks in college. So I drove cross country moving trucks. And that's what kind of gave me the reassurance, like, I can do this. Right. And so, yeah.
All right. Good stuff. Well, what's the website again?
HourlyAmerica.com. And you can follow my personal blog at HeathPadgett.com. Heath like the candy bar.
And you'll be done with the filming in
August of 2008. I mean, 2015. Sorry.
That's
August of 2015.
It'll be released?
Yes. That's when we'll be releasing.
The filming will be done shortly, like in a week or two.
Oh, yeah. The filming will be done in a couple weeks. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Fantastic. Hey, hang out with us while we visit with our other guests.
That sounds good. Thank you guys for having me this morning.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us from Elliott and Associates, Mr. Kurt Colomb. How you doing, sir?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. What'd you learn, or what struck you as interesting in that last segment? You probably haven't heard anything like that before. I know I haven't.
Well, I can tell you what. I don't ever want to sit next to this guy and follow him on a program ever again.
It's a hard act to follow.
Gosh, man, this is going to be some of the most boring stuff you've ever heard of after listening to this guy. But, you know, he harkened back to a lot of visions that I had when my father and I actually rode motorcycles from Atlanta to the Arctic Circle back in 2011 to raise money for breast cancer.
Oh, wow.
And Dad was 70 at the time, and I had visions of that trip and, you know, what it was like for him and myself. And seeing a lot of the same things that Heath has seen you know, we'll continue to see. So I was in complete enchantment with what he was talking about. And I feel like I'm sitting next to Mike Rowe Jr.
So it was going on that kind of a life adventure, you'd recommend that?
I strongly recommend it. What actually happened, I'll tell you a funny story, is that in 2010, one of the motorcycle clubs that I am involved with, I showed up to the meeting, and there was a guy there who had his pink letters all over the side of his BMW, and it said ATL to the Arctic Com. I thought, what the heck is this guy doing here? So come to find out, his sister had been recently diagnosed with breast cancer, and he was going to ride his motorcycle solo from Atlanta to the Arctic Circle to raise awareness and money for his sister's cause. So I thought, boy, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard of. And I watched him work with it and develop it, and he pulled the ride off, and in 90 days raised $10,000. So I thought, wow, that's interesting. So we were having drinks in January, and bada bing, bada boom, there I was going the next year. So, and my dad said, hey, I think I'll go with you. And I was like, okay, no problem.
So now a bunch of people go together?
The next year, that was 2011, Dad and I went ourselves, two of us, and it took about 34 days and raised about $10,000, did about 13,000 miles. Rode there and back, and it was a fantastic bonding experience between the two of us. So we're lucky we didn't kill each other, but beyond that, we look back at the pictures every day. So it was a fantastic experience.
So now let's talk about your day job.
Oh, if we have to, okay.
It's not, you know, as glamorous.
Exactly.
Driving to the Arctic Circle. But so what are you up there? How are you helping folks?
You know, this is one of those things that going back to Heath and his conversation about people finding work and finding their passion, I was the quintessential liberal arts graduate. And, you know, what do they do? What does history majors do for a living? Well, they go sell life insurance. And that's what I did. In 1992, I got in the life insurance business, and I loved it. I actually loved the concept of money and how it works and what you can do with it. And that industry changed and morphed into financial planning, and I actually left that company after 14 years. I was pretty old school, like you were talking about earlier, Heath, about you know, staying with one horse and riding all the way through. And I thought that's where I was going to get my pension check from. But
do you cater to a certain type of client?
Yeah, most of our customers are either small to mid-sized company owners or mid-level management professionals. A lot of folks come through us through transition. They may be, you know, looking for a new job and maybe setting up their own company. We've got a lot of people that you know, make that transition as well. Folks that are saying, you know, look, there's got to be a better way to bring my money in line with what it is I want out of my life. And we spend a lot of time with folks just talking about what it is that you really want. And just probably like Heath does as well when he's talking about some of these people that are working different jobs. So a lot of times we end up being in a client's life at the right time when they're making a large transition, and we're able to help them set their money up appropriately that they work so hard to save.
So are you seeing that as a trend, that people are more kind of mission-oriented nowadays instead of kind of just, I'm just trying to collect a big pile of money?
Yeah, we totally are. You've got a couple things going on there. We've been through some gut-wrenching transitions this year, and I think you've only seen the beginning. That was inevitable, but you're seeing a transition from cradle to grave mentality, from where people join a company and get a pension check after 30 or 40 years and don't look at anything else, to, hey, you know, what are some of the things that I could do out there? How could I set myself up? Can I take 5 years and go consult and go work in Africa or go work in Latin America? You know, should I set up my own company? We're seeing people that are looking at things from 3 to 5 year stints now, versus saying, what am I going to do for the next 20, 40, 50 years? Those time spans, they're just too large for people to really get their minds around. So I think breaking it up makes a lot more sense.
What about, are you finding more people caring about their legacy and how to make a difference?
That's another good point that you bring up. Yeah, what we're seeing is that people are living longer, obviously. Okay, so they're going to need more money. And things cost more today, and we don't have the pensions that we used to have. So preparing for retirement is an interesting issue. But it's a combination of it's a precarious balance between enjoying your money today and leaving a legacy for tomorrow. So that's where proper planning can come in. You can do both. There's proper vehicles out there that will help you to do both. But a lot of people have just not been schooled on how to properly set things up using the tax code to their advantage. And in fact, I think most people are set up to fail because they haven't really done anything. As far as you know,
is that true? Most people don't plan at all.
I think most people have a lethargy towards going out and talking to some professionals that may be able to give them some guidance. I think there's some fear there. Our information age has given people a lot of tools, but the problem is now is it's like drinking from a fire hydrant. So if you want information on X, you just Google that, and it's like, wow, where do I start? So we're actually coming full circle, and people are saying, there's only so many hours in the day. People are working more and more hours. So, you know, we're seeing an influx of people like, I don't want to be a do-it-yourselfer. I have no interest in that. I want somebody to help me guide me through this.
Well, some of these commercials make it seem like it's so easy, even a baby can do it.
Yeah.
Is that not true?
If only it was that true. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I have a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Maybe kind of along those lines, because I get the sense that if I'm a hotshot software sales guy, then
like
I just
Heath?
Feel like Heath could have been, but he's chosen a better path. Then it's me and my buddies, we talk about wealth management, and I gotta get a nice car, and I gotta get me a portfolio manager, a wealth advisor. But I wonder if there's not a whole other strata of folks that, you know, I'm a school teacher, I fix air conditioners, I work down at the warehouse, and so it doesn't even get on my radar to work with a wealth manager. Where in fact, the math can work. Those people can be quite well off and accomplish all those same objectives if they work with a wealth management professional. Is any of what I just said accurate?
Yeah, I think you know, the brand, you know, wealth manager is a tricky one. You know, the industry's got a couple names for us: financial planners, wealth managers, financial advisors. That type thing.
What do you like?
You know, it's a good question. I tend to like business partner. You know, small companies hire us. There are so many things out there that people could be doing to take more tax advantage, to take advantage of leveraging their money and really putting it to work for them. But going back to the school teacher example, there's been some fantastic books and studies that have been done. Thomas Stanley wrote one of the most compelling reads back in the early 90s that is still almost a Bible in the industry. It's called Millionaire Next Door. If you've never read that book, it's a fantastic read. And he goes through a study of millionaires, and what he finds is the complete opposite of what most people think, that the millionaire's got the Rolex watch and the Jaguar. Well, you find out that just the opposite is true. You know, we used to joke that there's more money in a pickup truck than there is in a Mercedes, and it's so true because smart people have their capital working for them and not out there depreciating in the parking lot. So, you know, the school teacher and the fireman and the plumber, we've got a lot of those customers. We really do. In fact, we're having a client appreciation event tonight, and there'll be a lot of those folks there, and they're doing very well.
Hey, Kurt, can I jump in here real quick? I'm going to ask you for some unsolicited free advice since I have you here. You know, I'm a young professional, and I'm out there working right now. What would you tell people who are, you know, maybe just getting started in their career? How important is it for us to, you know, start planning for this? You know, because a lot of us think that, you know, we have years and years and years.
Years and years, right. You're going to live forever, right? Yeah. I was just joking with somebody. I was in the sauna at the gym yesterday. Mm-hmm. I go to the gym every morning, and I was stretching out my IT bend, and I was moaning about my aches and my pains, and I said, man, I remember when I used to be able to hit it real hard, no problem, then any trouble. So now I got this IT band problem, and I said, how old are you, son? And he said, 25, and I'm like, well, enjoy the next 15 years, brother.
Right, exactly.
Because after that, it's not as quite as flexible. But to go back to your question, Heath, that's a good one. We used to tell the joke that there were two twins. Are you a twin, Heath?
No.
Okay, that's good. It's not about you. There's two twins. The one, they were both 21 years old. And the one twin said, "Well, I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna get a job, and I'm gonna save $5,000 a year, you know, $400 a month for the next 10 years or so, and I'm gonna set that aside and invest that." And the other twin said, "What are you gonna do that for? That's foolish. You need to take that money and go down to Midtown and meet some girls and hit some restaurants and some bars and have a grand old time." So they went about their business for about the next 10 years. And then the twin B, the partier, wakes up and says, I've had enough partying. I'm going to start saving my money. So twin B begins to save the same amount of money, okay, $400 a month, $5,000 a year. But twin A says, I'm just going to quit saving, okay? So twin B saves from age 30 to age 65, 35 years, $5,000 a year. But twin A saved from 20 to 30, so twin A saved 10 years versus 35 years for the other one. Same rate of return. Guess who's going to have more money at age 65? Take a guess.
Twin A, by the way, you're setting this up.
The guy who starts early, puts away a few bucks during his 20s and 30s, is going to win the race every time. So to your point, Heath, the simple advice I would say is keep it simple. I would say always have a business idea in the back of your mind, but the best tool that you all have for yourselves and your generation is the Roth IRA and the Roth 401k, because you want to go ahead and pay the taxes on that money now, and then your distributions from all the money that accumulates over the years will be tax-free when you're 65, you know, 55, 59 and a half, 65, 70 years old, it'll be all tax-free.
That's good to know. Thanks, Kurt.
Hope that helps.
Now, when you're working, can you take us through when you're working with a business owner? A business owner comes to you, maybe they were just laid off and now they're in a transition and they want to put some of their money to work, maybe become a consultant or, you know, start their own thing. They call you up. What kind of conversation are you having with that person?
That's a great question. Well, you know, first of all, we're going to find out, you know, what's going on. We want to be their friends and you know, help them understand their situation, their family situation and their business situation as much as possible quickly. Find out what it is they're trying to do. You know, what their situation is, both family-wise, professionally, and then financially. Gather all that data and help them to map out a plan. There's a lot of tools out there that can help them around the a lot of the penalties and the taxation. We see a lot of customers that have worked in corporate America for 5, 10, 15, 18 years and were making good money and saved real well, but maybe they got laid off, maybe they got downsized, any number of things could happen, and they're saying, look, why don't I just go set up my own company? But the problem is I need some capital. Okay, or I need bridge income. Well, there's ways of using the assets that they've already accumulated and avoiding all those taxes. Because you take that money out early from some of those plans.
Right, there's penalties, right? There's all kinds of...
Correct. If you do it incorrectly, you can really get nailed. So there's some programs out there that can get you around a lot of that if you set them up appropriately. But you got to talk with somebody who's been down that road. So that's one of the things that's been really, really popular is setting those programs up and walking people around those taxes and penalties all together and getting them into business for themselves.
Now, how much money does that person typically have? Can you do that with $100,000 or you need to have $1 million? Like
It's a great question. Yeah, it's, you know, depending on how what they're going to be doing and how much capital that they end up needing. You know, we talk with people, typically about 100,000 is usually a soft threshold for us. You know, we'll talk with a customer who's got less or a potential client that's been referred to us. We're not going to turn them away. We'd love a chance to talk with them. The $100,000 threshold, I don't want to appear snobbish. It's an unfortunate reality that there's a lot more avenues that are open to you in the marketplace from a product standpoint. So some doors will be partially closed to you until you get to about that level. So that's mm-hmm. why some guys end up kind of using that as a soft marker. But I talk to a lot of clients that have $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 saying, look, you know, what's the best way to handle this? And a lot of those people we end up taking on as clients.
Because you want to grow with them, right? You're kind of investing in them as well, right?
Exactly. And I'm so glad that you hit that point. I do a lot of work with high-income young professionals, people in their 20s and 30s that have pharmacists and that kind of stuff.
Right.
That have
documentarians.
Those kinds of documentarians,
exactly. Yeah, that have high school loans, but they have high incomes as well.
Right.
So you want to stay with them and grow with them.
Sure.
Because now we've got the new loan forgiveness program that's out there, which was just announced by President Obama a few months ago. Some of these professionals owe a lot of money, well into the six figures.
So what is this program?
What's the link for this?
Yeah, link for this, yeah.
Someone's writing.
Statute of limitations.
Right.
You just want to go out and Google loan forgiveness program. You'll find plenty that's out there. But the bottom line is that there are certain programs out there that if you work for certain governmental entities, that some of those loans may or may not be forgiven after a period of time if you've been servicing them appropriately throughout the course of the years. So they won't be a burden for you for the next 30 years.
All right. So this whole part of the conversation, though, started with Lee setting up a scenario that says a business owner calls you. Mm-hmm. So I'm having a little trouble reconciling myself with that because does that really happen a lot? Or isn't it difficult just to get these conversations? It seems like that first conversation or even getting those first conversations
right.
with people that have already accumulated money Isn't that?
You know, that's a great question. So basically,
that was a fantastic. It took me a minute to get it out, but I thought it was a fantastic question.
I think you did a great job. In fact, it was so fantastic. I'm not sure I understand it. But, that being said, let me back into some of the things. We're all about education. You know, there's a cliche that's out there that says that an educated consumer is, you know, our best customer. Okay, and again, the internet is all about information, but it's not very good with knowledge. So what we do actually at our organization is we have a series of curriculums, and people come in and they come to our workshops. They take our classes. We've got a series of classes on Medicare, Social Security for the baby boomers. We teach about the ins and outs of Medicare and Social Security, where the landmines are. There's a lot of money left on the table there with folks not handling that right. My partner Duffy does a great job with that. I've got another partner named Clyde. Clyde teaches a series called Buckets of Money, which is a very simple way of just looking at your money in a number of buckets that people really like because they can keep it simple. We do that. I teach one on retirement boot camp and one for business owners and retirement plans. So a lot of folks that we meet end up getting referred to some of our curriculums, and they say, "Wow, I did not know that you could do that." And we hear that a lot. When we hear that, it's like we're doing our job.
Now, isn't it a difficult conversation? And you mentioned earlier that you used to sell life insurance, and life insurance is one of those things that people need, but they don't like to talk about dying. You know, they don't. So then they might need it, but they don't want to kind of engage in a conversation that's uncomfortable. And I would think that money is kind of similar in that regard. That a lot of people just don't want to deal with it.
Or sit down with your wife and talk about it because you've both kind of agreed not to talk about it
right,
a lot. And it's costing you a lot of money probably, right?
And that's the thing. That's one of the reasons why people don't end up coming to see folks like us, because either they're between the two of them as a couple, they can't ever agree on who they're going to go talk to or what they're going to talk about, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of what we do is we get each party on each side of us, and we get their opinions, and we're able to formulate a plan that works for both of them and help the communication regarding that topic. And then, the quarterly reviews with us end up, being all that the work that they need to do to help ease the
When you're working with a couple, is it ever like one person is like, "Yeah, we want to do this, we want to travel, we're going to do all this," and the other person's like, "What are you talking about? I just want to go to the beach." And you ever have like where they each thought
Same
something
bed,
different?
Same dreams. Yeah.
It's every couple is like that.
Every couple.
Every couple.
This is a lesson for Heath and his wife.
He's in the corner laughing just as hard as he can.
Every couple thinks, "Oh, well, we're never going to get anything done." Well, I mean, how do you think guys like us end up making a living? We're basically marital counselors here. So
there's that title you guys were reaching for earlier in the conversation. It's money therapist.
Yeah, there you go.
Believe me, we do a lot of that. We do a lot of that. Absolutely.
Really? So sometimes they're like totally not on the same page at all.
Yeah, no, I think, usually they've got a lot of commonalities, but there's a good 50 or 60% that's, not shared. So it's our job to bring all that together and say, "Look, well, we can go to the beach. I just don't think you can do it every month." Okay, so we'll map those things out. And I've got something called fluffyourfuff.com, which is pretty cool. It's a system I came up with, to be able to use your money every year in addition to saving it. And we can talk more about that later if you want to give me a call.
What's the web address again, though?
It's a concept called Fluff Your Fuff. Okay, it's just something I came up with. But
sounds a little porny.
Yeah, it does, and that's why I like it. Exactly. Kind of got your attention there, didn't I?
It did. It woke me up.
I was going to go out and do websites and all this kind of stuff. And I said, I think I'm just going to say it. People are like, "What is that?" But... it's basically a concept that says, look, if you get a decent amount of money, $50,000 to $100,000, which for some people is like, "Oh, my God, we'll never get that." You can get that as a couple in a couple years. Set that aside. If that is invested appropriately, that will spin off more than enough interest to send you guys on a nice trip every year, okay, without touching your principal.
Oh, so you can put you in one of these buckets. You can make this kind of your
Bingo.
Bucket, and then you fund it. And then it'll pay for vacations.
You just reach in there once a year or every so often, take out a few bucks in interest, and bada bing, bada boom, there's your vacation money.
And then the law is to never touch the principal.
Correct.
Right?
Well, we've all been schooled. Don't touch your money. Well, if you're not touching the corpus and it gives you the incentive to save more throughout the course of the year, take a break. So fluffyourfuff.com.
There you go. So if somebody went to learn more, website for you guys?
You can start with Elliott & Associates. We had to trunk that down. ElliottAssoc.net, or you can go to KirkColomb.com. Either one. You probably have a hard time spelling either one of those, but Google will help you with that. KirkColomb.com or ElliottAssoc.net. Now, we keep the seminar listing up to date on the website, so you'll see kind of what's going on. And if you want to hear about a certain topic or you want to know about something more specific, just hit us up. We'd be happy to talk with you about it.
So the thought leadership, the curricula, some of this information, though, we can find it at these websites and start educating ourselves. I get the sense that's kind of how the relationship often begins to gel, yeah?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. People come to our classes and, they're able to see us and get a feel for us, whether they like the energy and the knowledge that we have. And if they want to come back for a consultation, complimentary, they're welcome to do so. You know, there's no pressure. We're not going to keep calling them, harass them, trying to, buy certain products. But the curriculum, and there's a lot of content on the site as well that's updated regularly, articles, current information, all kinds of stuff there. So check that out.
Fantastic. We'll do it. And we'll make sure as we post this and share this with our audience that we have that URL so people can get to that.
Okay.
Hey, listen, we got one more guy we're going to visit with. Can you hang with us?
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, a patient, but I think rather engaged. I think you've gotten some value out of these last couple of conversations. We have with us Executive Director with Odyssey, A Quest for Knowledge, A Path to College. Probably no accident that rhymes. Please join me in welcoming back to the Business Radio X microphone, Mr. Jeff Cohen. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It's great to be back. I still have your coffee mug.
Oh, yeah?
Fantastic. Hey, don't give it away. That was supposed to be a sponge. So Odyssey Atlanta, you want to share and kind of update our listeners to what you guys are up to?
Sure. So the stats in Georgia and around the country are pretty dismal as far as education goes. So we know that 35% of kids are able to read at grade level by third grade. That means that 65% are not. We know that 69% of kids graduate high school on time. That means 1 in 3 will not graduate high school. We know that 1 in 10 kids in poverty will finish college. So those stats are not good for our future. They're not going to be able to take great road trips or have financial assets to plan with. So Odyssey was created as a partnership between the Westminster Private School and Atlanta Public Schools. And what we do is we work with grades 1 to 12 in this amazing enrichment program. So we bring in master teachers from the private school sector and master teachers from the public school sector, and they work on these thematic curriculums. So each of the 12 years is a different theme. So the first graders do farm to table. So they learn how to garden and they learn what a farm animal is. But in that, they're doing math and they're doing reading exercises every day through games, through a thematic fun program they do for 6 weeks. As the kids get older, we ramp up the challenge. So the rising eighth graders, it's Odyssey Undercover. And so what they'll do is we'll stage a crime. This year we put some toxic barrels out by a river. We should have told the public we were doing that, but live and learn. So what they'll do is they'll learn criminal investigation. They'll actually do some DNA testing with some fake blood. They'll go to the CDC. They'll learn how to do crime sketches. So there's some artistic STEAM activities involved. They'll do a full mock trial. So they'll go to the Atlanta Bar Association. They'll have a full prosecution and a full defense and a full court. And so through that activity, they're learning to improve their reading skills, their math skills, and their raw test scores. And as the kids get older, we ramp it up even higher. So we have Odyssey filmers. So they would do things like you're doing it in miniature, Heath. So they come up with a film project of their own, and they learn how to edit that. They learn how to shoot the film. They learn how to stage the scenes, and they'll actually go out and market the little mini films that they created, which is great. And we have a producer from a local TV station, Atlanta 11, that works with them all summer to do that. And they'll visit CNN so they could see what that looks like if they want to do that as a career. Odyssey Apprentice, we do wealth management in miniature, so it's kind of a Shark Tank program.
Nice.
It's great. So kids have to create a business, and they learn just about the things that you're trying to teach, but in a fun way. So they have to decide how to negotiate with investors and which investor to bring on. They'll learn the basic economics of credit and saving, and then they'll have to sell their business. And so, we work with a lot of local entrepreneurs that talk to them about what does that look like in the real world if you really wanted to do that. And as the kids get older, then we really transform into a college access program. So this year we're launching a college road trip. We've always taken college tours, but we have on UROOT, a crowdfunding platform. We're trying to get the kids all the way to New York City. So Sinwark, I can really get some advice from you. And like, yeah. You're a master.
That. Buy an RV off Craigslist.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be a used RV available shortly, right?
Soon,
unless
right.
you plan on keeping that.
Yeah, that could be dangerous with 100 kids, but that's not a bad idea. But those are things that most of our kids, their parents haven't gone to college. So this is a way to expose them to a college campus. Every student will complete the common application, a scholarship application. Then they'll get to see what it's like to be on a campus. So we visit historically black colleges. We visit UGA. They'll visit some Ivy League schools. You know, in the South, that's Duke or the schools that we have available. And they kind of decide for themselves where they see a fit. You know, some of our feedback, we have a woman who's Dr. Thompson, so I just called her and I asked, you know, did Odyssey help? You can tell me no. You won't hurt my feelings. She's like, yeah, absolutely. My college counselor at Odyssey got me into Princeton. I knew I had good scores,
wow.
but I just didn't think an Ivy League school was for me. And she went on to get her MD for the University of Pittsburgh, and now she's at Emory in her radiation oncology internship, and she'll end up at Mount Sinai to finish her degree. But what's really neat is in the summertime, she took the summer off to work with communities in poverty to teach kids and to provide medical needs. So that's the kind of program that Odyssey is.
So it sounds very innovative. Those stats that you mentioned earlier, I mean, when you're talking about 1 in 10 kids that are in poverty now, are going to make it to college. That means 9 out of 10 aren't, or it's not going to happen for them. So what happens to those people? Are they just kind of this underclass that's going to, you know, just keep getting larger and larger?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, is the socioeconomic divide, what happens is yes, they kind of, it's more and more difficult for them to be successful. And they may actually get into college, but the challenge is to complete college with the financial resources and just the social pressures that we all go through of being in college. But if you're completely dependent on financial aid, you're just not allowed to make as many mistakes or to have a safety net.
Right.
So what we try to do is provide those skills to help them complete. And you know, who knows what they may or may not do if they don't go to school. But if they don't have a plan, we know they're not going to be productive members of society.
Now, is this an American problem, or are there other countries that are battling this as well?
We're one of the worst countries in the world for education. I hate to say that, and I forget what mm-hmm. we're ranked, but it's way down near the bottom. I think North Korea may be mm-hmm. just behind us. You know, it's just not good, and it's just that the challenges that our kids just aren't being successful. You know,
I mean, on one hand, you can say that we are very good because a lot of innovation comes out of this country, and some of it has to be because of our educational system. But obviously we're leaving people behind at too large of a number. Is that your concern? That's what kind of was the catalyst for Odyssey?
I think the catalyst, so the Westminster School is one of the best private schools in the country. And I think Westminster really wanted to give back to the community. We're a separate nonprofit, and so we're self-funded. But as a community statement, these were folks that had resources that started to see people around them in the community who were slipping further and further behind.
Right.
They didn't have enrichment activities. They couldn't get into school. So, yes, if you have resources and you can provide your kids with enrichment activities, then you get great innovation. But how many Einsteins or how many Dr. Kings or how many Barack Obamas are – we're never going to know because they didn't get the same opportunities.
Right. Now, are there any students – you mentioned one student that stood out. Is there other ones, other stories that you have that you can share?
Well, for me, it's fun because I just like talking to the parents mm-hmm. and the students. So some of the younger kids, you know, I talked to a mother whose children go to Cone, and she's like, I just can't believe the transformation. And she said, he's got more confidence. He's doing well in school. He joined the football team. He's running for student government vice president.
Wow.
Last year, I couldn't get him off the couch. And so just that motivation of there's a bigger world out there. There's more things that I can do. Those are kind of the fun stories for me. And then we have some students who are struggling through their first year of college, but they're making it through. And mm-hmm. they feel like they have people that they can rely on when they need help, when things get tough. So right now, you know, they're about to go into their finals, which, it, you know, for any first-year college student is a shocker because you realize, wow, I really have like 900 pages of biology to read.
That's right.
Why did I sign up for biology? Not even my major.
And then, in college, it could be two tests for the year. So, like, There's a lot of pressure on every test. But now, do you think that's kind of part of your secret sauce, is to create that support network for them, that they have a community that's behind them, that's kind of watching their back?
I think so. I think it's creating a culture of support, but also just giving them the skills that there's something really good out there for them that they want to do to make their dreams come true, and there's some ways to get there. So it's the same as, you know, we do financial planning. We kind of do life planning for young kids, and whatever you want to do, we support. And let's talk about how you're going to get there. And let's talk about some plan Bs. You know, I thought I was going to play in the NBA, and, you know, I'm 5'11".
How's that working for you?
It just didn't, you know, I think I was robbed. But, you know, that's...
Well, that's part of it. You got to teach them to not have that kind of victim mentality, right?
Exactly. Or to consider some options. You know, what are the three things you love to do?
Right. Or if you want to be in the NBA, maybe not as a player. Maybe you can take another role and still pursue it.
Where were you when I needed you?
So what do you need most? I don't know that you don't really need more customers, right? Or maybe at least your prospect pool is plenty big. It's bigger than we want it to be.
Well,
right?
we have a few needs. We are recruiting right now, and so we're looking for the best kids in Atlanta Public Schools. Our kids can stay in the program every year, so we do have 12th graders that have been in since they've been third graders.
Wow.
Which is awesome. But we're always looking at every year to recruit more students.
Okay.
So if you know a great student in APS that could use a little help, then please get a hold of us. Our budget's $1 million a year, so a lot of what we're doing is to keep the program going, to sustain it. We do have a U-Root campaign going on. If you'd like to do a little crowdfunding, every dollar gets us a mile further, closer to New York City. So if we end up in North Dakota, it's your fault because you didn't fund us.
And where can they learn more about that?
You can go to our website at www.odysseyatlanta.org, and you can visit us on Facebook as well.
And then, so if you're a student or a parent of a student, where should they go for that same place?
They go to the same place, www.odysseyatlanta.org.
And then are you working with schools here too? So do you need to have connection with the schools as well, or you have that covered?
Oh, we have great school partnerships, but if you're a teacher or a principal or a parent listening, then, you know, send great kids our way. We want to give every child the opportunity to be successful.
And this is, so you pick the kids up and take them somewhere else every day, or how does that work?
We have bus routes that we run every day, and we bring the students to the campus of Westminster.
Okay, so they're all the kids are collected and then brought to Westminster for how often?
We do that for a six-week period during the summer.
Oh, it's a summer program?
Yeah.
And then how many kids about?
It's about 350 this year total from grades 1 to 12.
And then it's grown every year, or do you kind of cap it at that's what you can handle?
Well, right now, so we're in our 10th year, so we just finished our strategic plan, how to get our numbers higher. But we've stayed at 350 to really do what we do, the best we can do it.
And so that's what will be this summer, you think, somewhere in there?
Yes.
All right, and that's odysseyatlanta.org, right?
Yep, thank you so much.
And this crowdfunding site, do you know that? Do you have that memorized?
Website, and then it'll link you.
If you just you go to our Facebook, or you can go to Uroot, which is spelled in a strange way. It's Uroot, and what it is, the crowdfunding platform for nonprofits. So all the proceeds come directly to us.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me back.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.